Okay, it's official. We are very much in the final sprint to election day. And face it, between debates, polling releases, even court appearances, it can feel exhausting, even impossible to keep up with. I'm Brad Milkey. I'm the host of Start Here, the daily podcast from ABC News. And every morning, my team and I get you caught up on the day's news in a quick, straightforward way that's easy to understand, with just enough context so you can listen, get it, and go on with your day. So, kickstart your morning. Start smart with Start Here and ABC News, because staying informed shouldn't feel overwhelming.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the most downloaded fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump, right? In today's episode, we answered listeners' questions. So people wrote in and we got to help them out. But this was after a 50-minute intro portion. So we're talking about fitness, current events, family life, and much more. By the way, if you want to write in questions that we can pick from, do it on Instagram at Mind Pump Media. Now, this episode is brought to you by some sponsors. The first one is PRX. They make home gym equipment designed to maximize space. They have a squat rack that folds into the wall, comes off the wall like 6 inches. So you can still use your garage or one of your favorite rooms, and you're ready to work out. You unfold the squat rack, and it's super stable. It could support 1,000 pounds if you wanted to. And they have a lot of equipment like this. It's great stuff. Go check them out. Go to prxperformance.com/mindpump. On that link, you'll get 5% off automatically at checkout. This episode is also brought to you by Organifi. They make organic supplements. Today, we talked about their Happy Drops. These are gummies that have been shown to make you feel better, happier. One of the active ingredients, in fact, operates like an SSRI. It increases circulating serotonin in the brain. It's one of our favorite products. Go check them out. Go to Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com/mindpump. Use the code mindpump. Get 20% off. Also, this month's program sale, MAPS Muscle Mommy, very popular workout program, is 50% off. If you're interested, you go to MAPSFitnessProducts.com and then use the code October50 for the discount. All right, here comes the show. You're training your shoulders consistently. You think you're doing everything right, but they simply won't grow. Look, in my experience, this is due to three reasons. That's what we're going to talk about today. If your shoulders aren't growing, it's probably due to the one of these three reasons we're about to talk about.
Ooh.
You guys want to guess?
Well, this is a hot topic for me on the recording with the guys. This is so if on the, I don't know how often you guys are checking all the YouTube troll comments that are amazing. Oh, yeah. For the series right now, but shoulders has been a hot topic. One of the clips that went viral that Josh made was the rear delt fly clip. So I'm going to say that one of the three is related to that.
100%. 100%. Yeah. And I found that training clients. Two things. One, people don't often train their rear delts, not nearly as consistently as they train their side delts or do overhead presses. But two, I almost never, Adam, you're one of the first people that I've ever seen do a rear fly properly.
Yeah.
Most people turn it into like a modified row almost. Like it's a lot of rhomboid, mid-trap. It's kind of like this squeezing back here, whereas it's really just bringing them out. Like the rear delt really creates this kind of short range of motion. And when you develop your rear delts, it creates a round, nice triangle or square shape to your shoulder. Without that rear delt, your shoulders look like they slump forward. In fact, people often blame shoulder development on side delts, but it's actually often the rear delt.
I agree. Plus, it's important from a functional perspective to keep that all nice and tracking
totally
in place. So, yeah, it's a definite important one to factor in.
Yeah. So you know, when you do bent over flies, for example, for the delts, you want to round your shoulders, and it's a short range of motion. You don't want the scapula to come really too far together at the top. Otherwise, it becomes like a mid-back exercise, and the elbows need to be flared out.
Yeah.
You don't want the hands to come out further than the elbows or like in this kind of externally rotated position. You want them out. And what you want to think about, at least this way I used to communicate it, is you separate the dumbbells or pull them out rather than pulling them back.
Yeah, I say fly out, don't fly back.
Yeah, okay, same thing.
Yeah. So most people fly back. And it's what makes this so difficult is that there's bigger muscles, right? The mid back is much bigger and stronger than the rear delts.
Yeah.
And so when you think about, you know, the brain sees weight, move weight, body says, do it as efficiently as possible.
That's it.
So if the goal here was to just move these dumbbells in this fashion as easy as possible, then it would be advantageous for the back to take over because it's a bigger, stronger muscle. But since you're bodybuilding or sculpting or trying to target a specific area, it's counter. So that's what makes this so challenging. If you just look at somebody doing the exercise and go, oh, okay, I'm going to do that now too, and you don't understand the mechanics of the movement or what that muscle is responsible for, easily the back takes over. And then you end up just working your back up, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, except for you're trying to target your rear delts.
And there's better back exercises. Yeah.
Exactly. And so that was a big turning point for me in my overall shoulder development. And what I found was the building the shoulders, in particular the rear delt, not only did it bring my shoulders together, but then it made my arms look better and it brought my back up together. So that, to me, that muscle is such an important, also for functionality, like Justin said, but aesthetically, like when we're trying to build an aesthetic, symmetrical physique, the rear delts just bring the back together, brings the side of your shoulder and arms.
Balances it all out.
Yeah. Have you ever seen an underdeveloped shoulder with an overdeveloped rear delt? Never. It's always, if it's a great looking shoulder, it's because it has an incredible rear delt. I read a bodybuilding magazine as a kid, luckily, that said that. And so I never avoided rear flies. And I also, you know, tried to feel it in the target area. So luckily I learned really early, and that really led a lot to my shoulder development. But, you know, if you're doing rear flies and you're using, you know, 30-pound dumbbells, 40-pound dumbbells, you're probably not doing them right. I mean, I could use 15-pound dumbbells and make them really hard by isolating that small, you know, rear delt muscle.
Well, how do you feel, too, then, in terms of people performing, like, just like a lateral raise, like, improperly? Like, I feel like I see that
same
all
thing.
The time.
That's the second
one. Same thing. Yeah. The side delts are another thing that's done improper. Right? Even if you're doing them, you do them and your traps take over the movement. Because your traps can shrug a lot of weight.
Yeah, it looks almost like a clean. Like if I do a heavy lateral, my hands come up higher than my elbows and I'm squeezing back here on my shoulders. Whereas a lateral, my elbows tend to stay at the same height or height of my arms and I'm not allowing my scapula to shrug. So it's this motion right here and I'm using just the side delt. And it requires a lot less weight. So in fact, if you go too heavy, you will inevitably turn into this kind of upright clean where... If you want to do a clean, there's nothing wrong with a clean.
It's great upper back exercise. Different exercise, though, yeah.
Totally different.
So I actually think this advice gets a bit convoluted because you'll see examples of these incredible bodybuilders with incredible shoulders doing some of these really heavy stuff.
Yes.
And I think it's important, too, to understand the educational process of lifting controlled and light and with perfect technique first, right? So part of the theme of the conversation that I've been having on this series too is just that quality of reps trumps everything. And it doesn't mean that at one point you might catch me in the gym doing what we call like cheat reps or using some momentum or doing things like that. But it's after a very solid foundation, mechanical foundation has been laid first, meaning I've done lateral, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of reps of lateral raises with light, perfect form. I have a great connection to that muscle. Mm-hmm. I can call upon it instantly just by thinking about it through the movement. And so what people miss is that bodybuilder that looks incredible that you see lateral raising 60-pound dumbbells, you know, and then you go try and mimic it, is that for probably decades that bodybuilder has built an incredible mind muscle connection with those laterals. And so he can now do these exercises where he kind of cheats the movement and still engage really well.
A really, really good bodybuilder will be able to target and isolate a muscle with almost any technique.
That's right.
And I would never teach that to most people because most people don't have that skill.
Yeah, you got to build that connection.
Well-developed bodybuilders have that ability to target muscles with technique that normally wouldn't necessarily work that way. So I wouldn't look at the advanced bodies. Plus, they're already so well-developed and all that. It's, you know, it's not necessarily the best example. And if you're one of those guys, look, if you're doing sloppy form and your delts look great, then just skip forward. But if you're working out and you think you're doing anything right, like, why aren't my shoulders developing? Why are my traps developing, but my shoulders aren't developing? Mm-hmm. One of the reasons is because you're not doing your lateral raises properly. You're not isolating the side delts, and it's becoming this kind of upright, you know, this clean type exercise where you're hitting the traps.
Yeah, now another one I tend to see a lot, and this is, I don't know if this started with trainers coaching or like the bodybuilder community kind of did kind of partial reps of this, but like in terms of an overhead press, yeah. I don't see a lot of full range of motion overhead pressing, if not even like an overhead standing press. That you don't see that as
no,
much.
Nobody, almost nobody in the gym does a overhead press where they bring the barbell all the way down to their collarbone and then press with full extension at the top where the head comes through and they're locked out. Like that's a full range of motion. What you typically see is this short kind of 90 degree press. And I know why people like that. You can use a lot more weight.
Yeah.
You can add way more weight to the bar or dumbbells versus doing this kind of full. So when I was younger, I did the short range of motion overhead presses. It wasn't until much later that I had a friend of mine that I worked out with that did these really full range of motion overhead press. And he used a lot less weight than I did. But his delts were so well developed.
Yeah.
So I tried copying him, and I could not lift nearly as much, but I got the craziest pump in my shoulder. So now when I press, it's this real full range of motion with the overhead press because you're missing half the exercise.
There's more opportunity to strengthen parts of your muscle that you wouldn't tap into otherwise if you don't go through that full range. Mm. I know that part of it, the thought process is keeping a constant muscle tension if you have it a little bit shorter, but then again
you do that, we're not gonna get in range,
we're gonna get that in range strength.
Yeah,
this one was this was weird when I connected this and because I too lifted the 90 degree military press, right? It was like the standard bodybuilder shoulder press. It wasn't until much later did I do full range of motion and had to go a lot lighter. But it was like, not only did it develop my delts, the upper part of your chest gets incorporated a little bit there too. So it just made that whole top of your chest and shoulder caps look a million times better with half the load. It blew my mind that was not adopted in the bodybuilding community, no. That it was skipped and not focused on because
it used to be the way people overhead pressed. If you watch the bodybuilders of the 70s, they were all real full range of motion. And, you know, by the way, and I know this is an aesthetic conversation about developing great delts. And by the way, the studies do show full ranges of motion always build more muscle than shorter ranges of motion, even if there's more load on the shorter range of motion. But there's also a functional component here. The shoulder joint isn't just the upper arm moving in the joint. There's also your shoulder blade that has to work with your humerus. So you have a shoulder blade plus the humerus, and they have to work together. When I stop short, okay, and I strengthen myself in this short range of motion, what ends up happening is I create an imbalance between my humerus moving and then my scapula moving with it. So what ends up happening is people who train in this short range of motion often suffer from shoulder injuries because they have this discrepancy of strength. Then you see them do one full range of motion rep and they're like, it hurts my shoulder.
Yeah. Anything outside of that range, you don't train, you're susceptible.
No, and you have unhealthy shoulders. That's why shoulder injuries are so common with people who lift weights. It's because of the short ranges of motion with the overhead pressing type exercises.
So nice, you know, working out in here in this studio being almost done. We're like this close, man, to this place being completely finished. I actually
are you using the what is that press thing you said?
Viking
on the
press.
PRX?
Yeah, Viking.
How press. Do you like it?
You used it the other day, right?
Used it the other day. I'll be using it today again. Today, so I shoot shoulders today, so I love that thing. Yeah. I love it.
Now these racks are different than the other PRX ones we had.
They are.
So these two arms fold out and come out. So
it's four posts instead of two, right?
So normally, it's a full cage.
Full cage.
Wow. Yeah. So the other one, which the other one I think is phenomenal too, though. Yeah, the other one is a more than sufficient. It's what I have at my house. It's what we have at the Truckee house. That I love that one, but this one is like full on rack.
What trips me out about the PRX is it's obviously designed for home use, but it's the most stable rack I've ever used because of the way it's attached.
Yeah,
it's the most stable rack.
It's funny to me why I thought the opposite was true until we worked with them.
Totally,
I thought, oh, that's weird. It's not going to be as stable because it's the opposite. Which thinking
it's
back,
way, it's it doesn't like, move. Course. It doesn't shake.
Yeah, it's attached to a wall. Plus, it's got the legs. Yeah. And so of course it would be as stable, if not
how
more
far
stable.
Do these come off when you fold them in? Is it like the other one where it's only like 6 inches off?
Yeah, this is barely
6 to 8 inches.
God, that's crazy.
Barely clearance out.
That's crazy. Just, I have an old school cage at home I bought it years ago, and
it's so weird to me that you still haven't changed.
You know what it is I haven't found a wall to attach, and I'm also just lazy to do it. But I probably need to set it up because it takes up so much space.
Yeah,
just fold it in. I could park another car.
I know. I was gonna say you don't even park in your.
I do.
Do you park in your garage?
I park my car in there. Oh, but I don't park Jessica's in there.
Yeah, I mean, I would. That's to me that. I mean, I want all of my garage space. And so it's the fact that I can hang the barbells, hang everything on the wall.
I have to have it,
and park the cars in there.
You guys both have a
setup like
that. Yeah.
How many of your workouts are at home versus here? Are they all here now because of the filming?
So I'm shooting. I'm trying to do. No, they're not all here. They're at home too. So about two to three workouts are at home. Three to four workouts are being done here. So right now I'm running a MAPS 15 protocol, although I'm modifying because of my injury and stuff like that, which was so funny. I was, these comments on YouTube and stuff like that. I thought he was going to run MAPS 15 exactly how it is. I wanted to see that. It's like, well, I'm sorry. I fucking tore my pec. Yes. I wish I was running it too, exactly the way it's laid out. Sorry. You know, so, but I mean, it's very much so, the MAPS 15, protocol. It's a compound lift with a isolation exercise with it. It's mostly two exercises a day. One day I dedicate to kind of like windmill, ab, rotational stuff. So the 6 day is kind of core focus. I saved that one for home. That one I haven't shot in here. Yeah. It's kind of like whatever, you know. Although I did shoot some stuff on my Instagram showing the windmill and how bad it was. But that's what it's looking like right now. Now, what I haven't decided is, and this when this will come out live, I'll have decided by then, is I think I'm going to move. It's been a month. After this week will be one full month. I think I'm going to move into a more three-day-a-week anabolic type of protocol. Yeah,
full body.
Yeah. I haven't decided if I'm going to do that or I'm going to do my own version of a split where I do upper-lower type of deal. It's
4-day split.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of wrestling with, do I want to do a upper-lower split right now or do I want to run a MAPS anabolic type of style? Mm-hmm. Because I'm actually itching for more. And it was MAPS 15 was perfect with the amount of volume and I
could, nice, you're feeling it.
And now. I could technically keep going the way I am, but you know, the part I'm missing is the crazy pump in my full body and stuff like that. So I'm wrestling with that right now. Yeah, so we'll see what I do.
That's fun, man. I gotta tell you guys about a new peptide that they're studying right. This is not available, by the way, for any partners or anything like that. So everybody's gonna get excited when I read about this. Mm-hmm. But it's a peptide that they identified. It's called long SLUPP332. All right. So what's so exciting about this? Well, they used it on mice, and they gave the mice. So essentially, what it does is first off, it causes weight loss, fat loss. And it convinces the body that the muscles are exercising. So the metabolism boosts and the muscles develop more stamina and endurance by doing nothing.
What if you pair it with something?
Okay, obviously, that's what would happen, right? But check this. So it's an exercise mimetic. They gave the mice that use this peptide, they did no exercise, didn't do anything with it, ran 50% further than they did before. It was like they were working out.
Wow.
It was like they were working out simply by using this peptide.
What?
Yes.
20% loss in body weight?
Yeah. Oh, you have it all up there.
Yeah, it does.
Look at that
up here.
So it reduced fat mass, increased energy expenditure, improved insulin sensitivity. It increases muscle activity. So increased the number of fatigue-resistant muscle fibers and improved endurance running. In obese mice, it caused a 12% loss in body weight with no change in diet or exercise.
Wow.
So they changed that. They literally sped up the metabolism.
So what's really cool about this, Sal, this peptide is... One of the things that we are running into, we noticed this when we started doing our GLP-1 group and kind of learning about this process, is there's a lot of people that I don't think are the best candidates for GLP-1 that are taking it, that something like this would be far better for them.
Yeah.
Like they don't, they're like, there's people that are in
like, I need to lose 15 pounds.
They just want to like maintain their muscle mass, but lose a little bit of body fat.
It's funny that you brought up GLP-1. What do you think is motivating these researchers have come up with exercise mimetics right now?
Oh, probably that.
Yeah, because what they're seeing
muscle preservation
with GLP-1s, right, is people are taking them. They're not strength training. They're not eating the protein intake. They're losing muscle. So they're trying to come out with compounds that mimic that exercise. So we may be in a...
So what happens when
exercise?
You guys, what happens when you combine those?
It's crazy.
What do you think? Of course, that's what's going to happen. There's no way they're going to. So here's what's trippy about all this. And by the way, this is with mice. We don't know if it's actually going to deliver with humans and all that stuff. But let's just speculate, right? Imagine if we were able to literally induce exercise-like and fitness-like effects on the body without any activity, without any watching your diet. people are going to be really disappointed when they realize that they look better, but the benefits that people talk about with exercise, they're not getting
the strength
them
behind it.
Not just that, but they're just not getting the value of it because there was no work, there was no effort, there was no challenge, there was no journey.
Yeah.
It's now at this point, it becomes cosmetic surgery. And, you know, this is going to sound like people are, you know, people who work out understand. People who don't work out don't get this.
Yeah.
But so much of the value that comes from consistent exercise is in the learning and the struggle and the relationship with pain and the failures and the work. Like anything else, like if you just snap your fingers and you look fit, you're not going to get the benefits. You'll get the visual benefits.
It's everything. This is everything in life.
Yes.
Everything.
We're getting there, dude.
It's such a...
We're going to get to that place.
I know. You just want to avoid it. It's like, no, this is exactly where you need to be.
We're going to get to a weird place where people are going to get everything they want. And they're going to be sad about it.
I had this really good conversation with one of my nephews who's in his early 20s and had a little bit of a setback financially. Something happened and it didn't go his way that he wanted to. Kid's a real hard worker, working hard, saving his money, doing really well, from doing much better than I probably was in my early 20s. And he's just like, was just distraught. And like, I'm so far behind and this and that. It's like, man, you are so focused on getting to be this, you know, 40-year-old version or super wealthy version of yourself, not realizing that when that happens, I told him, I said, I believe this is going to happen to you. You have the right mindset. You work hard. You're going to be successful. I promise you. At what? It's probably nothing what you think it's going to be. But the thing that you're lacking is the understanding that when you get to that version of yourself, that version of yourself is going to think back to right now and all this struggle and all this
that
shit.
That was the good time.
And as the good time and miss this. Mm-hmm. And I know that's fucking hard for you to wrap your brain around right now.
Isn't that crazy?
As you're depressed and you're sad and you're frustrated.
That's the nostalgia, yeah.
But this is, it's the struggle. The struggle is where the silver lining is, where the gold is, where the magic is. And when you're in it, I think that's part of the secret sauce of some of the most successful people are the people that recognize and embrace that and understand like, hey, this is the part. And it applies to weight loss journey and everything you're going. It's like, man, you reach this pinnacle and this physique or this dollar amount that you wanted. And then it's like, now what? And it's like, oh shit, all the hard stuff was the stuff that was so fun to get through.
If you look at the value of fitness and a healthy lifestyle, the way you look is way down the list. Unfortunately, everybody thinks that's the top. They think if they look a particular way, that life's going to change and be remarkable, amazing. The data is very clear on this. No, it actually is not. The value is not that at all. The health is a value. The mobility is a value. But there's also the mental and spiritual growth you get from the process. That's where so much of the value comes from. And I know people listening who aren't there yet hear this and go, screw you. I just want to look this way. I want to whatever. But this is just, and what's going to happen, and we're getting there. I believe science is going to get us there with a lot of things. I believe we're going to get to a place where people are going to get everything they want.
Yeah.
And then they're going to be depressed and anxious and sad. And they're going to be like, I thought, what's going on? Like, why am I still not happy?
I had the same conversation just with my kids. And we're talking about video games and like what our fond memories of certain ones. And it was literally like the ones that challenged the most and were very like definitive. Like, oh, I passed this boss and it took me like 3 months to get past it. I'm like, as simple as that is, you don't want to play a game that doesn't challenge you specifically so you feel like you've accomplished something. It's just not fun. And it's no different than any of the rest of the stuff. And two, I've been talking a lot with Ethan about this because I struggle sometimes. I get excited when like my kids are like passionate about something. I'm like, yeah, I want to like go grab, like buy something to make, you know, this a thing and be a part of it. But I'm like, no, he has to go, you know, figure out a money, you know, to pay for this. And then that's going to actually mean something to him now that he has it. Otherwise it's just not going to have the same effect. And I'm like, oh, I got to just pull myself out of this and just be like, yeah, great. Keep going.
Oh my God. You just reminded me of a story I forgot to tell you guys. It just made me laugh. So, Max, okay. One of the cool things, right? Kid's not into sports, not into stuff like that. But he's going to be a fucking closer. Like 100%. Like,
of course
he's got,
is.
He's got like, so he wants this Bowser, of course, right? Some other Bowser. It's like $100. And Nana tells him, you're going to have to work for that. You know, you're going to have to help Nana water the plants for $10, help your mommy do some things for $10. You can wash cars with your daddy for $10. Like, so he's been telling him, like, so he came home like this last week. And so every day, mom, can I help you do the watering? So he's watering the plants. And can
to
I
make money?
Yeah, to make money, right? And so the other night, he's sitting down and he's got like all these like, coloring these like pictures or whatever that, and he's like diligently working. I'm like, what are you doing, son? He's like, I'm making paintings. I go, oh yeah. And he goes, I'm gonna sell them.
No way.
Yes.
On his own?
Yes. He goes, I'm gonna sell them.
Can you bring him here? I'll buy one.
Listen. I go, oh really? I go, who are you gonna sell them to? Nana will buy them. Right?
Of course she will.
Right.
You got a built-in customer.
So I get so excited. I go, hey, I said, tell you what, when you're done, before you go to bed, Daddy will help you make videos to close the family. And he goes, huh? I said, yeah, I'll teach you how to sell. And so all night he says, Daddy, you can teach me to sell? Yeah, I'm going to teach you to sell.
Oh, bro, your heart must
bro, be so... Yeah, it's like, I go, listen, I'm going to teach you an alternate advance close. So this is to make sure they have to buy something. And he's like looking at me all of a sudden. I'm like, so I'm going to record you and then you tell Nana, do you want to buy this one for $10 or this one for $20, for both of them for $20, like that, right? So I repeat it, get him to say it, and then I video him like that. So I had him do it for like each family member, and then I sent the videos to each member of the family. And they're all like, oh my God, I'll take one. The guy made like $50 like in a night, dude.
He's like, yes, it worked, Dad.
I was like, bro, it was so great. He repeated it just right. Like he had totally registered. I was like, oh my God.
Those moments are the best.
Oh, right? It was so good to see. I didn't think that would like click for him. It totally clicked.
What was that costume you sent us? He put on like a Mario. So, it was all into it.
This is what's so cool about the internet today, that you can find this stuff now. And I don't know why I didn't think of this. Maybe, I guess probably 10, 15 years ago, you just wouldn't find this. But now, like on Etsy, you can find shit like this. So Max, of course, wants to be a Bowser Mario theme is the whole theme again, right? For the sixth holiday in a row, right? So he's like, I want to be Fire in the Tummy Bowser. There's different types of Bowsers, right? There's like 50 different Bowsers. And he wants to be Fire in the Tummy Bowser. So Katrina found a lady online who makes custom costumes. And so we had that customly made.
Oh,
so she literally sent her a picture of what the Fire in the Tummy Bowser looks like.
And
the lady, it's legit. Yeah. Has a full zips up. And then he has a backpack that goes on. That's the turtle shell. It's got a hat that goes on. It was like, it's so hot. And he didn't want to take it off. Sweating all day. He's just like, I don't want to take it off. I'm like, you got to take it off, buddy.
I bought, we were at the store the other day and we're walking through and Jessica's like, let's get something for the kids. Cause we had spent the whole day without them. So we want to come home and give him something. So, you know, what's cool when you have little, especially little boys, is I remember what got me excited as a little boy. So I'm like, let's get him those Spider-Man pajamas. She's like, he's already got pajamas. They're like, it's not about the pajamas. I'm like, watch. So we buy the Spider-Man pajamas, come home. What do I tell my son? These are Spider-Man pajamas. Put them on and see how fast he can run. He's like, what? He puts them on. He's like, and he jumps on the couch. He's like, Mom, I'm stickier, like Spider-Man. And he's like, look at this. And I pretend like I can't see him because he's too fast.
Yeah.
So he runs by him like, where'd you go? And he's like, taps on me. I turn on, oh my God, you're too fast all day long. He's running, he's jumping on things. This is so cool. He's got Spider-Man powers
now. Oh my God, it's so funny. That's right. Well, see, wait, so I'm doing something different for the costume. So I hope Katrina's like—
Are you guys dressing up with him?
Yeah, we're all dressed. So he's already told the family that they have to be all Mario characters.
Oh, okay. Yes, so who are you?
So I'm not a Mario character. So this is what I'm getting at is, and reason why Katrina wouldn't let me. So the Bowser outfit that fits me, that's like sick and custom like his, is like $700, right? Okay. And I'm like, order that. That's what I was just like, I am not ordering you a $700 fucking Halloween costume you're going to wear one time. I'm like, well, you try and sell it afterwards with that. She's like, I already know you. You know you won't. And so I just forgot about it. What are we going to do? And then his costume came in and I'm like, shit, I need to have something. I got to have a legit costume. Yeah. So we were on last night, looking for costumes. She found like a really reasonable, like really good Grinch costume. And he's a big Grinch guy.
Oh.
So now what I'm worried about is that I'm not going to tell him yet.
You think he's a hero?
Well, no. I think he will be upset because the whole family is Mario characters. Daddy is the Grinch. I hope he doesn't get pissed that I'm not.
Get the Mario thing and don't tell Katrina. He'll be so happy.
Drop the $700. Yeah, that's what I said. I was just like,
he'll get so excited.
I was like, just order
it. She can't get mad when she sees him get excited.
That's how I feel too. So I was like, you know what happened was she didn't. then that costume came in, and I'm like, hey, what about the one? She's like, I told you, you're not getting that one. It's too expensive. And I'm like, Katrina, I'm like, are you kidding me right now? Like, now I have nothing. I can't, his dad can't have the worst costume of everybody else. He has this awesome costume. And so then I'm telling her last night, I'm like, I should have went with my gut instinct. I should have just got it and told you. She's like, no. She's like, this website doesn't look legit. I don't want to spend that kind of money and this and that. Yeah. So, all right, we'll do the Grinch. So the Grinch it is. So we'll see what happens. I don't know if he's going to be pissed or he's going to accept it or what. That's his favorite Christmas character. Remember, Max likes all the bad guys, right?
I know, that's right.
Hilarious. His favorite Christmas character is the Grinch. So that's his favorite Christmas movie cartoon. That's his character. So, like, I'm hoping that. And what I'll do, I know what to do. I'll set the table, like, guess what? Like, Bowser and the Grinch are going to team up for Halloween. I'll make a big deal about it.
Set a good story.
Yeah, I'll set a good story up, and then he'll be okay. If I just showed up, then he'd be let down. But if I set the table with a good story, I think it'll be okay.
That's awesome. So, you guys feeling, hey, we finally got the happy drops. Do you feel these things when you take them?
I like them.
This is wild.
Yeah.
These are wild. They run out.
Yeah, but of all the things that are in there, okay, there's normally, in all supplements, in my opinion, there's normally one or two ingredients that make something feel a way or are probably the most valuable. When you look at that, what is it that I probably feel so or
go to Cola will give you a little energy, but it's the saffron. There's a type of saffron that's in a surfactive. That's a surfactive. This is an extract of saffron that's been shown to have effects.
Is that a flower?
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. It's the little not petals, but the little things inside the flower.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's shown to have.
That's what the bees fly on or get on?
Yeah, I think that's part of it.
Yeah. It's shown to have SSRI.
I just know it tastes good.
It increase. Well, don't do eat. You just don't eat.
No, I haven't. Anymore.
But it increases circulating levels of serotonin, like an SSRI. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's called the stigma inside the flower.
The stigma inside.
But
the flower.
Naturally, so you're not worried about like it downregulating or anything.
No. Okay. And I mean, there's studies on it for depression, and then. For libido enhancing in some people.
Women, I would love to hear that from somebody who suffers from something like that or struggles with something like that.
Yeah.
It takes something if they notice that.
Yeah.
I feel like, it puts me in a better mood but it's so hard to tell with things like that with the podcast.
What's the recommended amount?
Two. Would you eat four? Yeah,
at least.
I was like, at some point I'm going to be on here. Yeah.
Like Tom Cruise on Oprah. I thought that was going to happen.
Look how fast Justin is. He's so mobile and fast.
That's what that was. That was a slight flex. That was.
Hey, can you guys do this?
See, jump? Jump?
Yeah. See if you can. If I did that, follow me.
My knees are still intact.
You're doing all right.
Dude, I have a stat for you guys. Okay, I came across this. I had to fact check it because I was like, no fucking way. This is true. This is true, though. Okay, you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
2023 to 2024, NBA combined payroll. So all, LeBron, Steph's, everyone.
23 to 24.
Yeah, this last year. Last year, combined all the top players, all their salaries.
All the players or all the top
players? All the players. $4.9 billion.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
That's not the interesting stat. Okay? 2023, OnlyFans content creators. $6.6 billion.
Yeah, well, that's obvious.
I mean, is it?
Yeah.
I mean, a platform that's that disgusting. Is. Here's what's interesting. That's a complete like free market type of platform. That is not managed commercial power behind it. I mean, that is just content creators putting out on a platform, creating their own fee and stuff like that. That to me is wild. When because the NBA is massive, the amount of money it generates, how big it is, the amount of commercial behind it, like to think that OnlyFans creators are making.
There is a much stronger desire to seek novelty with sexual desire than there is to watch sports. So it makes perfect sense. The most visited websites online are porn. This is like a big deal, by the way. Like, and I don't mean a big deal like money-wise. This is a big problem. The data now on pornography and this kind of stuff is pretty clear. It's damaging across the board, and it's not a little damaging. It's a lot damaging. So we've run this experiment of let's just let people, have this crazy access, and it's messing with kids especially, and adults, messing with marriages and everything. It's crazy. Yeah. So that much money being spent on something like that, it's like, man, there's a lot of, not great.
I was wondering about, because it's like, you get it for free. Like, I've never understood the appeal of subscribing.
I'm the same way.
They want to feel more of a connection or maybe feel like they're important.
That makes it even more sad.
Yes.
She's talking to me.
She's not. She's got some bot.
I mean, obviously, Justin, because I'm the same way. I think this is that's so weird to me. But we've had strip clubs forever.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And like, you know, you're not going home with her, yet you go and you throw tons of money on the table.
Sure.
Like, think, I mean, so it's the same concept, right? Now you have a virtual.
You're getting the attention that's personal.
So I'm curious from you guys, because you guys have boys that are teenagers. Do you guys talk about OnlyFans? Is this a conversation that comes up?
Pornography was a big
just conversation. Pornography in general.
That's in the same category. Only jokes with my oldest, but yeah, he's. Yeah, I don't know. We haven't really dove into that conversation. That's something that we're going to have to probably discuss at some point. We've definitely talked about porn and, you know, like where what he's been looking at online and those kind of conversations. But I would know, first of all, if he subscribed to something, because like we have all the data from his phone. I would know that
at
least. And plus, well, the social media thing has been rough because it's like,
you can't police that. It's so hard to police, right?
And it starts with now there's other ways, entry points, but like Snapchat is definitely like a first sort of entry point for a lot of kids now. Because it's just, and I actually don't mind it as much because it's more just like, hey, it's almost like texting. There's nothing crazier other than just texting and then it goes away. But then that's like sort of the gateway into the TikTok and then these other like horrible platforms that I'm like, no.
Yeah.
And then he realizes that if he's now I have this like shirt I want to sell, I'm not getting any views. If I put it on TikTok, now I get views. Look, Dad, I have this to show that I'm getting. I'm like, those aren't even real views. I'm like trying to nag it out, you know, and like, and then I'm also like, I got to check myself because it's like he's excited about interaction. But I'm like, dude, this is such a worthless platform. You're not going to get any return. Like, let's move our focus over here.
There's always what I find interesting about all this stuff that we look at and we go, this is damaging, is the promise of money oftentimes allows people to justify, you know, this kind of stuff. Like, well, but, you know, they're making money.
Yeah.
Money's not everything, you know? It's like, these girls on OnlyFans, first of all, what percentage of them are actually millionaires?
Mm-hmm.
Very small percentage.
Very small.
Very small percentage. But even then, even those people who are millionaires on there, like, are they really improving?
Dude.
Generally, their quality of life, their mental health. I'll make an argument that probably not.
I'll go on a limb and say there's so many more opportunities didn't even know exist right now that you could make money just by sitting there basically doing nothing. Like if you actually did something before and you have like a skill or a specialty or something, like for instance, like Courtney was just kind of looking over this because it was like, I don't know, we kind of have made remodeling and all that starting to come up with bills and all this, and for some reason she thinks, oh, I could, you know, do. I'm like, babe, we're fine. Like, you don't need to look for odd jobs, you know. Like, I don't need you.
And here's my $25. That Eddie Murphy's kit is one of my favorite skits of all time.
I totally thought of that. She was like, bring this.
Now we make $4,765,000.
That's a great.
Thanks.
Is that raw? Is that raw?
Raw or delirious? Okay. One of the someone had to look at the editing. About to look at that. That's probably all. That's before they were born.
So she found out that literally there's this way she can make a good amount of money if, like, lawyers, when they go to trial, they need interpretation for charting that nurses do. And so all she'd have to do is interpret this for like hundreds of dollars an hour. Just read it over, tell them what they're talking about, and that's it. Bro. And I was like, okay, yeah, you can do that one.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So it's interesting, right? Because you have this, it's like a double-edged sword, right? You have obviously where the housing prices have got, what the cost of goods is, gasoline. I mean, it's just so crazy for a kid right now that's teenage, early 20s to look at that. That has to look so overwhelming. But yet at the same time, too, there's shit like this on the internet this did not exist.
No.
I just shared, I don't know if you guys heard me, but right before we came in here, I was looking at a post that our buddy Enrico did, and it was on this girl who works 4 months out of the year, makes $1 million a year. She literally, all she does is, if for Halloween, the whole Halloween season, October, sets up pumpkins in front of people's houses, just in the Houston and Dallas area, not worldwide, not even statewide, just in two big cities.
She shows up to decorate your house.
Yes, she has an Instagram. Her whole Instagram is built around basically showing her get the product, showing the finished product so people can see like, oh, that looks really cool. I like that. She has packages from as cheap as like, $130 or $300 all the way up to like $2,000 in that range.
Yeah.
And then she also will pick it up when it's all done. And she books out before the end of August for all of October for an entire year, and she and then all she has to do is service
so
people.
Smart,
she's done.
Dude. Like what? A great like gig.
Just. Yeah, I mean, before social media and the internet, you couldn't have done that.
No, there's people that deal with Christmas lights too.
Yeah,
yeah, you hire them just to.
I've seen it even like they do these picnics where they set up the whole thing ahead of time, and like it's like this like full on display, like decorative display, and like the same kind of a thing where they just ahead of time sell. And people can just like, oh, we're going to go on this random picnic, but all of a sudden it's all here. Yeah. It's all set up. And I'm like, that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
There's so much of that.
Really good money.
Getting jobs in general easier these days. Easier. I mean, you go around and there's jobs available everywhere. When we were kids, it was a little more difficult.
If you're motivated, there's just not a lot of motivation. Yes.
I mean, when I grew up, you had two options. You either worked on a ranch or you worked at fast food. Yeah. That was it.
Yeah. Or you had a paper route. You guys ever had a paper
or
route?
Construction? I mean, dig ditches all day.
Yeah.
I mean, there was like
I washed dishes at the pizza.
There was a handful of like for basically underskilled employees, you could only do a handful of things.
What did you guys make back then? I was making
$4.25.
So did I.
Yeah,
$4.25 an hour.
Yeah,
that was the minimum wage.
That was
minimum.
Yeah. And before that, it was just 50 cents.
You know, minimum wage is going to be almost 20. I think it's 20 now where we're at.
Is that what it is?
Almost 20.
It's close. Yeah.
I think it's close.
I convinced the owner of the place that I wash dishes to pay me under the table, though. So it was nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, wow.
I'm not supposed to say that, but I did. Uh-huh. I was a kid. Everybody relaxed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I took every bit of overtime, anything that I could get. So mine was $4.25, but then like if I had the opportunity to work a sixth day or a seventh day, like I always took, because the time and a half seemed crazy.
Yeah,
like,
I would do overtime as much as possible. I feel like,
you know what a good job for every kid to do? I think every kid should work in retail and every kid should work in a restaurant. I think those two teach you so many skills.
Should be a requirement.
Yeah, like working in a restaurant, you got to learn how to hustle your ass off, and you got to learn, and then retail, you got to learn how to work with customers.
Deal with people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think just work. I mean, I would make that same case for the ranch. I mean, the type of work ethic it takes.
Oh, that's physical, work ethic. Yeah, for sure.
Work ethic and problem solving and, you know, language. I mean, you name it. Like, there was like a whole host of skills that I had to figure out, you know what I'm saying, going into that. So it was real. And then also just, I mean, there's something to be said, too, about hard labor. I mean, awful hours, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to do stuff and literally shoveling shit, like, you know, digging ditch. I mean, that's crazy.
This reminds me of a conversation I had this weekend where I was talking to somebody about exercise, and they were talking to me about how difficult it is to want to work out and to get that feeling. And I said, you know, if you, and this is just a conversation I used to have with my clients. One of the big mistakes people make is they wait for the feeling that motivates you to do the thing that you want to do.
Yeah.
And it's very unpredictable. However, there is a predictable way to induce the feeling you're looking for more often than not, and that is to take action anyway. In other words, do the thing you're supposed to do, and then what ends up happening as a result of that is you end up inducing the feeling you're looking for much more often. So it's a nice hack. So in other words, have the discipline to do the thing, and you'll get more of the feelings that you're looking
especially for. Especially with these short workouts that
you can
do, which was never a thought process going into that. Like back in the day, it was like, oh no, that's worthless. But no, if you can just make a nice impactful 15-minute like punchy workout
And watch what happens.
Yeah,
you end up feeling like you
I think that's out. I think that's where we did the biggest disservice to the space, right? It was by us overcomplicating workout intensity. This is why too I push so hard back on a lot of our peers that love to tout the studies that are related to intensity and building muscle. And it's just like, man, it's yes, that matters a lot. You've been training for 10 years and you're trying to add another 10 pounds
of
muscle.
Or in a 60-day study.
Yeah, exactly. Or okay, that makes sense. But for the whole rest of the world that has never been consistent and is trying to figure things out, it's like, man, they have to do so much less than I think that they realize. I mean, obviously part of the motivation of what I'm doing right now in this series is to kind of show that, like, man, if you look at the exercise portion of what I'm, there's nothing impressive. There's nothing cool or in hype or like, wow, he's hitting some cool stuff. And it's like, I'm not killing it. You don't have to. Like, you literally go send a signal to build muscle, which, by the way, when you don't ever do any of that, it doesn't take very much to send that signal. And then make good food choices. Oh, by the way, you don't even have to overcomplicate that. Just eat whole foods. And when you do, make sure that protein is the center of it. Like, literally,
That'll take
80% of that.
Yes, so. That will take you into a very fit, very strong, aesthetically pleasing physique. Now, will that win you a title in bodybuilding? No. But I mean, most people are just looking to be fit, strong, have some abs, look good. Like, I mean, you can achieve that with literally that.
Look, when I first became a trainer, I thought the problem that I had to solve as a trainer was, how do I get people the results they're looking for? That actually wasn't the main problem that I had to solve. The main problem that I had to figure out how to solve was, how do I get this person to exercise consistently for the rest of their life?
Yeah, from here on out.
That was the real problem. And when I figured that out, my clients became extremely successful. The results happened as a side effect, and I became very successful as a trainer. Versus, how do I get this person the results that they want? That's not the issue. And that, in fact, people get results all the time. They just don't know how to maintain them. They don't know how to stay consistent. Yeah. And there's a lot that goes into that. But that's the thing that you need to focus on. Not the intense, like, let's get the fastest results in the shortest period. No. Let's figure out a way to make this last so that you do this for the rest of your life. That's the real issue.
Yeah.
And that's where trainers, I think, need to focus if they want to be successful.
Yeah, I know.
Did you know that they found the world's oldest cheese?
Where?
Guess.
Hold on. Italy.
No, but
France.
No.
Ireland?
China.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How old?
3,500 years ago.
What?
That's what they say. In this
carbon dating?
It was on a mummy. And apparently it was like smeared on their neck and on their head. And it was like, well, it was a fermented dairy product or of some sort.
Okay.
Which, you know, it's got to be cheese related. It counts. You know, but
yeah,
3,000. Yeah, I don't know where they got that number from in terms of
how they
date that. Yeah. But that sounds
how fantastically do you make, now old. Cheese? Is it hard to make? I don't know how you know how to make cheese, right?
Why would I make?
I don't know. You milk cows?
Dairy? Yeah. Well, it's not like a dairy also does cheese.
Okay. All right. I have no idea. How do you make cheese? What's the process? What do you do?
I've never done it, but I do believe you take milk and you add something in it that causes it to.
Coagulate
or create curds.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you use cheesecloth and you get out the.
So it's a pretty basic
strain. Basic, very basic, yeah.
Basic process.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because that basic process has been around for a long time.
Uh-huh.
Right? Cheese has been made. How long have humans been eating cheese? Can you look that up, Doug? It's got to be thousands of years.
Well, I just knew because
it preserves for a while, right?
Genghis Khan and all that. Like, I remember that there was a whole.
They lived off
part,
that.
Yeah, cheese was a big part
and
of their
blood.
Culture, yeah.
Wasn't it cow blood or horse blood?
Yeah, they ate horses cheese. And cattle and all that.
They drank
their
blood,
roaming.
If I'm not mistaken, and they ate cheese. That was like
their primary. There a lot of nutritional benefits to drinking blood?
Yeah, iron and B vitamins. Oh, yeah.
Well, that was the
actually drinking it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
They had more protein, and that's the thing. That's what they were stronger and like more physically pronounced, and that's why they were dominant and over a lot of the other
they
cultures.
Had
8,000 years, bro.
Wow. How long we've been eating cheese. They didn't find cheese, but.
No. That's what I mean.
Okay.
Wow. Look at that. Oh, well, actually, look at that. Clay shell sieves. Oh, evidence of cheese making.
Well,
not actual cheese.
I know, too, that there's some, like, archaeological, where they go back and they look at traces of certain, for instance, there's, like, wine
cheese,
that was spiked.
By the way, it's kefir cheese.
Oh, kefir.
Yeah, okay. Doug found it.
Okay, cool.
Gross.
Yeah, it's weird, but but it has, like, they had some psychedelic type of, like, substance in some of these wines that were spiked back in the day, and they think that that's where a lot of, like the Oracle Delphi and all that, where they used to go there, they would drink this wine and then they would like start feeling, you know, the effects of the psychedelic wine, but they were able to trace that back to these goblets and stuff, and like they found traces of some kind of like ergot or something in there.
Aren't there some animals that will eat fermented fruit and get drunk as hell? I think that's a thing, right? Which animals are
like crows? Bird?
Do that.
Birds, yeah. Crows. Well, they'll eat like fermented fruit and just get drunk.
Yeah,
there's birds that let the bugs sting them so they get high. I know that, right? There's let their wings get all like certain ants or certain bugs.
Oh, here we go. See, Doug, that's a great website. Wallabies get okay. So what do wallabies eat in there, Doug?
Opium.
Wow.
Yeah, they're into opium. Yeah. The wallaby.
Where they just fall over. And
monkeys, let's see, what are the monkeys doing? Alcohol.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a tree that
maybe. Drunken monkey.
Yeah.
There's a tree called the marula tree that elephants apparently get high, or there's a fruit on it actually that's fermented.
Are you familiar with the famous Bali coffee where they fall around the mongoose that shit the little pebble, they shit the beans out, and then and it's like really expensive.
Yeah. Yes.
I have some of that, right? So
did you try it?
I haven't. I kept it as my niece.
It's supposed to be like
it's supposed to be the best. It's like literally this little tiny thing like cost like $50 or $100 for this.
Yeah, because they poop it out, but it does.
So what the mongoose does? The mongoose eats the coffee beans, and the way it goes through the digestive system, it brings out some of the acidity, and then it makes like the so. There's elephant one. That's sorry to deter you from this, but you brought up the elephants. That it just reminded me of this article I just saw. About elephant, there's this super expensive elephant coffee, and they do the same thing. They eat from these coffee beans, and it passes through, and then you have people catching this elephant shit. You know, it's massive, right? They're catching it, and then they process it, and then
humans are just special animals, aren't we?
Yeah.
Just figure out weird ways of making
food. So what like always interests me is like who it. Like yeah who's sitting around and goes like, you know what we should do? We should try the elephants that shit. Like, I mean, what makes you even
you're go- probably starving.
Yeah,
you know, we're probably like, oh, I've had food in a month. It's like, dude, I'm just gonna eat the shit.
I've watched shows. Yeah, people get desperate.
Yeah. Maybe it's something like that, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, speaking of elephant poop, my son and I are on this.
Great transition.
I know. We're on this journey of learning about animals and stuff. So the kid loves learning about all kinds of weird stuff. And I love it, right? Because I like doing that too. So he randomly came up to me and he goes, how much is an elephant poop? I'm like, let's find out. So we watch videos of elephants pooping. They poop a lot.
A lot.
A lot.
Yes.
Apparently.
Yes.
Oh, he was cracking up. He was laughing his butt off.
I want to say they're like 10-pound like balls.
It's like Doug. It's like a Doug size.
Yes.
Poop.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's quite a bit.
That's a great visual.
Yeah.
Looks different, but it's a lot. Yeah,
it's a lot. Just a little different. But
yeah. Anyway. All right. So the shout out. All right. So we're going to do something that we've never done before. So one of the things that we love doing almost more than anything is creating new programs. Actually,
yeah, it's my favorite.
So it's some of the best memories I have are of going with you guys. And what we tend to do is we tend to drive off somewhere. We'll rent a house or go stay in Truckee, and we'll take 2 or 3 days and we'll dive into creating a brand new program. You know, that's how we created MAPS Performance, Aesthetic, Split, like all the programs went through this process. And it's an amazing, fun process. We've never shared that process of creating a program really with anybody.
We've kept it behind the curtain.
And it's wild. It's a good time. It's fun. It's creative. A lot of arguing, a lot of yelling. It's literally what it's like.
It's chaos.
So what we're going to do is we're actually going to film some of this, and we're going to put it on Instagram Live. You're going to watch us in the process of creating a new MAPS program. And this is going to air it on an Instagram, right? Live.
That's correct.
6 p.m. Pacific.
Correct.
On our Instagram page. And we're going to film us, or it's going to show us creating a brand new
October 16th.
Brand new MAPS program.
That's right.
Come tune in. Seeds Daily Symbiotic is the world's best probiotic. All right. What does it do for you? Well, it helps ease bloating. It improves regularity. It also helps your gut barrier, your skin health, heart health, and it helps you create more micronutrients. It's very good for you to have a nice, healthy microbiome, and Seed helps that. Again, it's the world's best probiotic. Go check them out. Go to seed.com/mindpump. Use the code 25mindpump. Get 25% off your first month's order of Seed's Daily Symbiotic. All right, back to the show.
First question is from Rainbow Mom 3. Does an increase of strength equal building muscle?
Not always. However, consistent increases in strength will almost always inevitably lead to building muscle.
It'll signal it.
Yes. So now how can you get stronger without building more muscle? Well, a muscle can learn to contract harder so you can get a better central nervous system activation. That also gets trained when you strength train.
Technique.
You can get your technique. Your muscles can work together better. So the skill of the lift, you start to master so you can lift more weight. But as you stay consistent with this, then you'll definitely build muscle. But especially those initial strength gains, a lot of that is central nervous system. It's not muscle fiber growth.
I guess that what I would say is an important thing to attach to this is that you're eating in a caloric maintenance, or at least hitting your protein intake consistently with this.
Yeah.
So my concern with clients that are seeing strength gains in the gym, but I know that they're missing their caloric intake, or they're missing, more importantly, their protein intake. then they're getting a lot of the, you know, central nervous system adaptation. They're improving the skill, which is all positive things, yeah. but they're not reaping the full benefits of building muscle and speeding their metabolism up because they're not feeding the body properly. Now, if you're feeding the body properly, you're giving it, you're getting those calories, you're hitting your protein intake, and you're seeing strength gains almost always.
Yes.
You're building muscle. Yes. That's what I would say.
Yes. But strength gains are great, especially in the first, I'd say 3 years. I don't know how you guys feel about this, but maybe the first 3 years of training, like that's what you should aim for with good technique and good form, because as you continue to get stronger, 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 you're going to get results. And because strength is objective, I can measure it. I can see how much weight's on the bar, how many reps I'm doing. It's a great thing to chase versus just the mirror, which can be very subjective.
Next question is from Lift to Live. What's Sal's verdict on essential amino acids since he's been using them?
So now we've all, I've been using them. You've been using
them. Very consistent.
And you, Doug?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm pretty sensitive to supplements. And I was hitting about 200 grams of protein before. And now I'm adding essential amino acids to my regime. I think there's a subtle difference. Now, I was hitting high protein before, but I do think I feel fuller, and I did see some strength gains from supplementing with the essential amino acids. So I think that there might be some benefit to, unless I was eating maybe 250 grams of protein, maybe I wouldn't get the same benefit, but I'm doing about 3 to 4 scoops a day on a consistent basis.
So I'm 3 times a day I'm doing it, just like clockwork. I'm doing it between meals, and I'm doing it nonstop because I have yet to be consistently over 200 even. So I've only had a couple days in this entire process where I've got just around 200. Most days I'm landing like 180, 190, and I'd like to be closer to 220, where I'd like to be. So for me, it's been a no-brainer. I'm going to take it. Now, I, on the other hand, am not that sensitive. I a lot of times I'm skeptical. I don't think there's anything I can attach and say, oh, I feel this. Where the true test is going to be is here in the next week or so. I'm going to go get my body fat tested again. And knowing that I was consistently under eating protein for most of the time in this process, you know, the likelihood of me building a lot of muscle back, even with the things that working into my benefit, are probably slimmer, I should say. So if I come back and I got some pretty good numbers, considering that I didn't hit the optimal amount of protein every day by also adding the EAAs in there, I'm going to be very happy and sold by that
the
alone.
The two types of people that I think would really benefit from this are people in a calorie deficit, even if they eat high protein, because I am convinced now that even more protein is beneficial in a calorie deficit. And the problem with that is protein has calories, and sometimes people hit their targets, plus they hit their calories. Essential amino acids have very little calories in them, but they have a very high kind of anabolic effect. So I could see value there. The other value I could see, which this is now becoming a thing, is where people, they can't eat anymore, and they don't even want a protein shake. And I'm seeing this with the GLP-1 people that we work with.
Yeah.
Even a protein shake to them is hard to
It's really
to get
all
down.
They can even
And essential consume. Amino acid powder in water, it's like flavored water. It's not like protein. It doesn't satisfy in the same way. It doesn't cause satiety in the same way. So for someone who's struggling to get protein and doesn't want to choke down a shake, essential amino acids are a lot easier to drink. So I see those are the two people where I see tons and tons of value.
Yeah.
Next question is from Rainbow Mom 3. I see weighted vests for walking all over the place. What are your thoughts?
This is making a comeback again.
Yeah, I know. This is one of those things in fitness that comes in and out.
We addressed this a lot at the very beginning. You remember?
We did.
It was a popular thing back then, and they kind of went away a little bit. Yeah. And I think GoRuck makes Ruck. It really
made it popular.
Yeah, really popular. It's a popular brand now that a lot of people have heard of Rucking now. And so between that and CrossFit, I think they've repopularized something that's been around forever.
Yeah.
I got into it for a little bit, and it was mainly when I was like going through my whole like body weight kick, and then I wanted to, you know, see if I could do unique loading and whatnot, but it was just so obnoxious. Back then they had like, it was almost like the bomber vest.
You had weights.
Yeah, you had the weights that were like these like little
metal things you put
metal
in.
Metal donuts that you put in there. And then doing push-ups or doing any dips, or it was so funky and it would just flop.
Yeah.
But so they've definitely innovated in terms of like, making them more like form fitted, and they're better in that regard. But they're just, I mean, it's, to me, it's always been funky.
Here's so I have a way. I want to hear what you guys first before I say how I would use this, because I really don't see a lot of application for myself personally. There's one way I could see myself using this, and I want to hear what you guys, if you would use it at all, and how you would use it if you were to.
I use weighted. I use weighted belts if I'm doing a weighted exercise. Otherwise, maybe a vest. But here's why I don't like weighted vests. I don't like weighted vests for the same reasons why I like walking. I like walking as a form of exercise because people can do it with good technique, and it's a low risk of injury. And it's easy for people to do it consistently. Now, what ends up happening, and the reason why people can walk with good technique is because people still walk. The reason why I don't like running is because most people don't learn how to run again. They just go run to fatigue, and they end up injuring themselves. So it's a terrible form of exercise for most people. But they can walk, right? But now what you're going to do is you're going to take the average person who's going to start to walk, and you're going to throw 30 pounds on them. They don't have the skill and technique to walk with an extra 30 pounds and not develop overuse injuries. So you see plantar fasciitis. You end up seeing, you know, knee pain. You end up seeing hip pain as a result. And it really takes away the value of walking, which is I can get the average person to walk every single day, and I know it's going to be safe, and they're going to get good activity. Yeah. And the extra calorie burn you get from it, your body adapts to that very quickly. It's not worth it unless
running in them is a horrible idea.
Terrible. Yeah. Unless you're training to get good at doing something with a vest on. Let's say you're a soldier.
Yeah, unless you're in the military or a fireman.
Yes.
Yeah, that's where I see value.
Or a police officer. Yeah. Like you have to have gear on you and then you should train.
You actually have like a vest
totally
that's weighted to deal with. But yeah, honestly, for me, it would be just hiking or something like if I was like, but even then, I'd probably have a weighted backpack.
That's
something
right.
like that's very specifically to what I would emulate if I was going on like a long backpacking trip. I'm going to have a weighted backpack.
How would you use them?
So the only way, and the only reason why I thought about this, because I'm in the middle of this whole thing right now of documenting and transformation stuff, which has got me in the mindset of like what I was doing when I was dieting and bodybuilding. And to your point you just made, which is you're only going to get the benefits of the calorie burn for a short period of time, and then your body adapts, and then it's no big deal anymore. So I was so methodical and calculated about my weeks coming into my peak that I could see this as one of the variables that I would adjust as one of the last variables going in. So for example,
like 2 weeks out.
Yeah. For example, like 4 weeks out, I started, these 1 hour walks, you know, every morning, first thing in the morning, 1 hour walks. And then I added these 12 minute HIIT sessions the next week. And then the week after that, I would increase another day of doing a half hour of moderate intensity. And so I could see myself going, okay, on week three, I'm going to just do all the same stuff, but now I'm going to add a vest to all that. And that will create another little gap of another calorie deficit by doing that. But what I know is that it'd only be a short period of time because then my body would adapt to this. So it's not like I'm going to get long-term benefits, but it's a variable that I could change or manipulate to get a good week or two of just changing that and nothing else. And it would give me that extra calorie.
It's good if you want to get good at walking with a vest on. If you want to train to walk with weight on you, then you should probably practice that way. But again, the average person that's walking for fitness, the value of walking is that it's low risk of injury. It's easy to do. You don't have to change your workout clothes. You could do it almost anywhere. It's good for you. It's healthy. You add a weight vest to the average person who's trying to do that. And then you start to, and plantar fasciitis is the most common thing that I saw with clients. Mm. They would start adding weight either by holding dumbbells or a vest. Then they start, you know, their foot would start to hurt. And then once you get plantar fasciitis, it sucks. Then you got to take time off and you can't do your exercise. So I almost never recommended weighted vests.
Next question is from Jose Ramirez. Should I still train legs if I'm currently 5 weeks out from a marathon?
Yeah.
5 weeks?
Yeah.
That's so, a long time.
Yeah. I would train legs up until you stop working out.
The week before.
Yes. And the difference is the intensity. So as you get closer to the race, you're reducing the intensity to the point where the week before, like you're going real easy because you're saving yourself for the marathon. But you don't want to take time off, especially 5 weeks
off. You'll get weaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll atrophy.
Yeah. Especially as people, and then you see risk of injury start to go up as well. But you need to reduce the intensity is what you need to do. I think that's the big mistake a lot of people make leading into a competition is they ramp the intensity up. because he gets so nervous about the competition. When in reality,
you know, you got to flip that on its head.
Yes, yeah, dude, you want to peep for it.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the consensus are with all the studies. I know I read a study way back when that alluded to if your body atrophy begins to set in 7 days after recovery.
Mm.
So if you trained your leg, say on Monday. And then 7 days, or I mean Monday, you're sore, let's say till Wednesday, then 7 days after that Wednesday, which is basically 10 days after you train them, atrophy is already starting to happen. Yeah. So, which means you probably want to train them all the way up until the week before. And then that week you're going to go moderate to low intensity. And then you'll have kept all the muscle. You'll be fresh and ready to go. But yeah, I wouldn't want
to. What I used to do with my marathon runners that at one point I trained quite a few is we would do 1 day off season, 2 days or 3 days a week of strength training. But as they ramped up their miles, the strength training came way down, and it became 1 day a week of strength training. And then the 2 weeks leading up to the race, the second to last workout was a very light workout, and then the last workout was mostly mobility.
Mm-hmm.
It was mostly mobility, getting them ready for the race. But it was 1 day a week for 12 weeks or 16 weeks leading to the marathon because of the amount of miles that they put on their training. And it's just, this was trial and error for me. I made so many mistakes training marathon runners because what I thought was low volume was too much because they were running for, you know, 25, 30 plus miles a week. And it was just
gets away from you quick. You're like, oh, wow, this is too much for them actually. So yeah, I learned the same lesson, having to back off and really introduce it a lot less than I thought.
Yeah, totally. 100%. Look, if you like the show, come find us on Instagram. Justin is at Mind Pump Justin. I'm at Mind Pump DeStefano, and Adam's at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.